Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, what a pleasure it is here to have you today, Veterans Day. Live in L.A., it's The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. My daughter was in Boulder, Colorado last night at a concert. She has now informed me she loves it.
Beautiful place.
Guess I'll be flying to Boulder, Colorado. She loves travel. My kids love travel. No, I shouldn't say that. My daughter loves travel.
I love to travel also.
You do. You are, that is crazy. You had a streak of about 9 straight weekends where
I think I spent 2 weekends all summer in Los Angeles.
And by the way, LA is great on the weekends.
Yeah, but I'm here every weekend in Los Angeles from September to February, essentially. So
here, before we get to Greg Cosell, you bet football, you play fantasy football, you want to get smarter in football. Nobody better than Greg Cosell. So OBJ, according to Diana Rossini, a reporter, has told people he's going to wait till after the weekend of football to make his announcement. And there's 7 or 8 teams that are vying for him. Again, I'd like to say I think he fits best the Saints and Patriots, but the Packers is way more fun. Because I think the Packers are a Super Bowl team, and OBJ in big games would be a lot of fun, right? Whereas I think he helps New England. He helps the Saints. I think they could be playoff teams, wild card teams. I don't know if he takes them to another level. I don't think he's there as a player. But I do think some of this is orchestrated because I've made the argument he's a bigger brand than he is a playmaker right now. And that, let's be honest, over the next several days, he's going to get a lot of attention. And as his brand has really, I mean, it has shrunk. It's evaporated over the last 2 to 3 years. We're giving him a lot of press, and we're talking about him. He's probably selling some shoes. That's not a terrible thing. I mean, this is not illegal. I do think marketing and rumors are good for all sorts of people. They're good for politicians. They're good for media people. They're good for athletes. Getting your name out there, a little bit of mystery. You ever go to a concert? You ever notice? The number one act's always a little late to get on stage. Kind of ramps up. Oh, man. Now, Guns N' Roses would be late, you know, by 4 hours. But you know, the generally, they don't hit the mark exactly when they're supposed to be on, right? A little anticipation. I think you build up for OBJ. I was on a Boston radio station yesterday, WEEI, for a diabetes charity. Support that, by the way, Christian Fourier, the former football player. And that's all they were talking about. You know, Boston's got a lot of things going on. All they were talking about was the guy that's not on their team. Their big hole. I asked him, I said, what's your big topic tomorrow? They're like, OBJ. It was like, he's not even on the team. I know. I said, well, everybody's talking about OBJ. So I think everybody's talking. They're percolating. It's interesting. We discuss it. And there you go. So some of this is brand. One of my criticisms when he went to Cleveland, I said he's a little more brand than he is football player. In fact, I said, of the 10 things I talk about him, the one-handed catch was way up there, but he'd become models and stuff and, you know, some theatrics on the sideline and social media. He'd become a bigger brand than he was a player. I don't have a problem with brand. I mean, KD's got a brand. He's a great player. LeBron's got a brand. Great player. You know, Aaron's got a brand. He's a great player. I don't have a problem with that. Push. Baker, sometimes the brand's bigger than the player. I know. I'm picking on Baker. But in OBJ's case, I mean, I'm getting nothing from productivity, and I think he's trying to kind of get people to talk about him for 3 days. That's fine. It's fun. I'll be looking. I'll be on my Angry Bird Twitter all weekend long trying to figure out, even on Sunday, where he's going to go. I think the Packers would be a lot of fun. With that, 42 years at NFL Films, the most objective voice when talking about real football, what we see, what we get. Greg Cosell now joining me live on Thursday. All right, so, you know, I often say this about quarterbacks, especially young ones. The coaches will tell me what they think of them by what they let them do. And boy, yep. I thought that 18 months in that building in Green Bay, and I thought that was a tepid game plan. What did you make of the first start? You see anything you like with Jordan Love?
Well, it's funny you say that because I watched the tape and I was expecting, based on everything I had heard, Colin, to see a horrible performance. I did not. First of all, their O-line was so bad. He was under pressure in the first half, way too much pressure. Now, inexperienced quarterbacks, as you know, almost always show a tendency to play fast anyway. But up the middle pressure makes that worse. And that is what Love faced on far too many snaps. And say what you want about Steve Spagnuolo and that defense, the production hasn't been there this year. But that is a difficult defense to play against tactically because of the pressure. They had five snaps of zero blitz. The Packers did a really poor job on all of them. Now, you can't pick up everybody in zero blitz normally, but they were letting defenders clean through the A gap and the B gap. And I thought as the game progressed and you got into the second half, I thought Love settled down a bit. If there wasn't all this hype about Jordan Love, if he was, let's say, a rookie in his first start week one, you would say, that's not a bad performance. There's something to build on. So I'm not, based on tape study, Colin, I don't believe it was a terrible performance at all.
Yeah. My knock was I didn't see a lot of juice. Like when I watch Justin Fields, I see juice. I see big, athletic, run, arm. I see a lot of stuff. My thing with Jordan was I didn't see it wasn't a disaster. It just felt like
I didn't see
a moment where I was like, wow. I didn't get a wow moment. Is that fair?
Yeah, but I mean, I think wow can be defined in many different ways. That was a tough defense for him to play against. I'm not exactly sure what you mean by wow, you know, that special play. No, you probably did not see that. But you also have to take into account the fact that as that game progressed in the second half, he kind of settled in a little bit. He had a stretch in the second half where he started to look pretty comfortable. Now, in all likelihood, he's not going to play another snap this season, so we'll have no idea.
Right. All right, there you go. There's a throw right there. So a game that very few people watched, I did. I actually thought Matt Ryan looked pretty good. You know, their margins are thin, so Atlanta's not going to blow anybody away. If they win, it's pretty tight. But I will say, Arthur Smith, we know that Matt Ryan, when he gets the right coordinator, can be a very effective coordinator, the right voice in his ear can be very effective. What do you see with Kyle Pitts, Arthur Smith, Matt Ryan? What does the tape say?
The tape tells you that Arthur Smith is doing a really good job of designing and creating one-on-one matchups for Kyle Pitts and Cordarrelle Patterson. And those are his two playmakers. And he's doing a really good job. We saw that this past week against a good Saints defense. But that's essentially been happening all season long. They're a very under-the-radar team. Obviously, they've got some significant weaknesses and flaws. But Matt Ryan has always been a precision quarterback. He's a pocket player. Some would say he's a dinosaur. But he knows how to play, and he knows how to exploit the matchups that are defined and created for him. And they have two players, big, physical, fast athletes that can create and win one-on-one matchups.
Yeah. All right, so I said this, the Dallas-Denver game, I didn't make too much of it. It's a bury-the-tape Sunday for Dallas.
Sure.
But my eyes do tell me, and they've told me this several times this year, Denver's got players, and there's talent on that Denver team in a lot of different units. So what did that defense do that just completely discombobulated the Cowboys' offense?
It was a couple of things. First of all, Dak did not throw the ball well. But a Vic Fangio defense always does a couple of things, and he uses his safeties extremely well. They do an excellent job in coverage, reading routes, matching routes, passing them off in what are essentially zone match concepts. And it's very difficult at times for the quarterback to recognize who's passing off, who's staying, who's getting passed off to. The interception in the fourth quarter by Caden Stearns was such a good example of that. They totally fooled Dak Prescott. He had no idea that Caden Stearns would be where he was in the context of that defensive structure. And that's always what Vic Fangio has done. It's one reason he's held in such high regard and why so many coaches study him in great detail, Colin, as I'm sure you know, because what he does with his safeties is really, it's a little bit different, and it's tough to coach.
So I'm really interested in this next answer. I watched Justin Fields, and I thought I would trade a win for finding a franchise quarterback. And what I saw is what I kind of projected out of college. It's going to take him a while, but, yeah, man, there's a lot of juice watching him. He plays with a lot of confidence. In fact, one of my biggest knocks was, slide, kid. Please get down. But
yeah,
I just saw really – I watched his feet, and I thought, this kid is confident, and that's a really good Steeler front.
Yeah, he's playing over these last number of weeks with far more poise and composure. And the talent is obvious. We don't need to discuss that. Here's what I would say based on watching every snap of him this year. And people can debate the play calling, the play design. Those are separate issues. I think he still has a ways to go. And by the way, this is not a surprise, Colin. He still has a ways to go as far as reading and recognizing, eliminating and isolating from the pocket. He still shows a tendency to break down prematurely and leave the pocket. And he's still at that stage in his development where he at times takes that extra beat to confirm that his receiver is open before turning it loose. And that's a subtlety that will continue to progress with more experience. But you're right. He's a great, great athlete. He's a big man. You kind of lose sight of how big he is.
Look at that. He's big.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, this might seem a little hyperbolic, but in some ways, when he runs, he's almost a combination of like a Michael Vick and a Cam Newton.
Yes.
You know, he's not exactly like either one, but there's similarities.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the way he throws the ball. I like watching him
play. He does. It comes out really well.
Yeah. So I got to tell you this. One of the things I always loved about Lamar Jackson, I defended him a lot, and I said he cares so deeply. Every offseason, he comes back. The first year he came back and his traps were bigger. He was thicker. The next year I thought he was a little less movement in the pocket. He was a little bit more patient in the pocket, although he's a brilliant runner. And now I watch him and I'm like, you know what? In the pocket, he's made a step. He feels to me when I watch him, he is a better pocket thrower. And he wins a lot of games. And by the way, he was behind again this Sunday. I watched every snap of this thing. There was every reason to lose that game. So what are you seeing as Lamar as a pocket passer?
Well, this game was fascinating because in many ways, Lamar as a passer was not the factor in the second half and overtime. They only threw one ball. That was really a timing scheme throw that went more than 15 yards in the air in all of their second half and overtime drives. So this was a really clinical approach in the second half with the run game. They've played out of base personnel. They ran the ball. They used their offensive linemen as pullers incredibly effectively. They stretched the Vikings defense out horizontally with the way they ran the ball. And obviously Lamar is a part of your run game and a major part of your run game. But it was an odd game because they won, and he's the quarterback, and they came back. But it was not really a Lamar game in the second half the way we think about Lamar games.
Yeah. You like watching tape of him? What do you make of him? I mean, do you when you go into what do you make of watching tape of Lamar in that offense?
I think, for me, he's become an acquired taste, just like Philip Rivers became an acquired taste for me because of the way he threw it. You know, Lamar's become an acquired taste for me because he's not really conventional in the way he plays.
Yeah.
He has a number of tendencies that I think if you're a purist as a quarterback coach, you try to get rid of those tendencies. He has a tendency to climb the pocket when he doesn't need to, when he creates his own pressure. And then, of course, he gets away from his own pressure. So, you know, for me, you know, he's definitely become a better pocket player, absolutely. But, you know, like so many quarterbacks who just are different, which doesn't make them worse. And, you know, he's a great player. That's not my point. But for me, he's become an acquired taste. But he's a really good player.
Yeah, very productive. So I got to ask you two questions about a game. Again, the world was watching Green Bay, Kansas City. I watched that. But I was glued to the Eagles, Chargers, which I thought was really – I felt like I was learning things about both teams. So let's start with Justin Herbert. He was just on our show this week. What's the film say about Justin Herbert?
that he's got great hair. Justin Herbert is, you know, he has phenomenal ability and obviously a big arm and can move, but that offense, it's really incredibly rhythmic. They almost play offense like you think of the way Drew Brees played in New Orleans. Hit the back football comes out, hit the back football comes out, which, by the way, is not surprising at all because Joe Lombardi is their offensive coordinator and he came from the Saints. So in many ways, I see Herbert as kind of mechanical and robotic in a good way. Everything is done with precision and efficiency, and he always has second reaction ability, and he always has the ability on shot plays to drive the ball vertically down the field with ease. I mean, he's an easy thrower. I've watched tape of him, and I go back and forth watching plays and go, wow, he just threw it 65 yards in the air, and it looked like there was no effort whatsoever.
Yeah. It's interesting you said that. The knock out of college was he's a little robotic, and what you're saying is it plays to his strengths. He plays to it.
In a good way. And, you know, I tell you, another guy who was like that, and obviously then we'll move along, was Carson Palmer. You know, very robotic, but in a good way, because there was such a precision and an efficiency to the way they play.
So, but I want to talk about Philadelphia. So Jalen Hurts is never going to throw the ball over the top. That would worry. Most great quarterbacks have that part. It's a component to their game. He is productive. Let's explain their offense, because I think Philadelphia, there's some real players here. That receiver from Alabama, Devontae Smith, can really play. They've hit on some draft picks. Let's talk about Hurts and the Eagles offense.
I thought this was their best performance of the season, their most rhythmic. It had a sense of refinement to it. They put Hurts under center, which I believe they need to do. I've said from day one that I think they should treat Hurts like the Cowboys treated Dak Prescott when he came out of Mississippi State as a fourth-round pick. Put him under center, use the run game, use the play-action pass game, the play-action boot game. It has such a big impact on defensive linemen and second-level defenders. I thought they did that this week. You saw him make some very rhythmic timing throws to Devonta Smith at the intermediate levels. I think that this is the way they should continue playing. To me, it will bring out the best in both Hurts and their overall offense.
All right, so we watched the Rams twice this year at home just get boat raced. But it was interesting because when I go to like a PFF and people grade offensive lines, I can't grade an offensive line. I can watch wide receivers, quarterback. I don't know. I know Quentin Nelson's good, right? I know Rashawn Slater, left tackle for the Chargers. Nobody gets past him. I can see the obvious stuff of Trent Williams. But it's interesting because I'm always told, oh, the Rams O-line is elite. And then I watch Tennessee, and I'm like, guard, center, guard, they're just abusing that front. That's what looked like happened to me, is Tennessee looked at the film going in and thought, our guys are better than their guys. We're going to blow this thing up. And McVay, for a half, didn't really adjust. That's what it felt like to me. What did the film say?
Well, Tennessee over the last month in big victories against the Bills, the Chiefs, the Colts, and now the Rams, their defensive line has been the best in the NFL.
Wow.
And they just use a four-man rush, Colin. And what they do is they have multiple stunt concepts, and there's Jeffrey Simmons, who can literally lift up offensive linemen and drive them back into the pocket. But they have multiple stunt concepts. Their defensive profile over the last month has essentially been four-man rush, good mix of zone and man in the secondary, depending on whether it's nickel or dime. But their D-line pass rush over the last month has been the best in the National Football League.
Yeah, well, the Rams will attest to that. Okay, so to me, I think it could be the most interesting game. It is Cleveland, a team that I think has a very good roster, against Mac Jones, who's gotten out of the lousy throw business. And the Patriots are starting to kind of look like the Patriots. Not a ton over the top, but not many penalties. Don't put the ball in the turf. Time of possession, you know, pick up third downs. So you tell me, how's that Browns defense match up with
really good
Mac Jones?
The Browns defense is way overlooked because of all the talk, obviously, about Mayfield, Chubb, Odell Beckham, the whole deal. But the Browns defense is really good. They have tremendous depth along their D-line. They've got some really good players. We know about Garrett. Clowney's been solid. He's not a great pass rusher, but he's really solid, and you can move him around. Malik McDowell has played really well. I'm sure you remember him coming out of Michigan State.
Yep.
A big-time talent, but had all kinds of issues, and hopefully he's settled those because he's playing at a really high level. So this is a very good defense, and I'm fascinated to see this game. We know what the Browns on offense want to be, who they are. They want to run the ball and have the play-action pass game work off their running game, and that's how Baker Mayfield will make his plays down the field.
And your play of the week involves Baker.
It's exactly what I just spoke about, and let's go to it right now. It was a long touchdown pass to Donovan Peoples-Jones against the Bengals last week. And this is exactly what they are. They actually ran the same play last year against the Tennessee Titans, also to Peoples-Jones, for a touchdown. And this is what I'm talking about. They have three tight ends on the field,
yep.
13 personnel. And they have Donovan Peoples-Jones as the single receiver to the boundary side of the field. Now, what they're going to get from the Bengals is cover four. And this is, it's kind of a coverage that's both a run and a pass coverage. So now if we focus on the boundary corner and the boundary safety and Peoples-Jones, we'll get a feel for what goes on here. Now, it's really important to see Peoples-Jones. He angles his stem inside toward the safety. He wants to grab the safety's eyes. Now, the safety does not have any other vertical threat coming at him, so he should be focused on Peoples-Jones right now. No one else. He should focus on Peoples-Jones, help his corner. But what happens here is the crossing route by David Njoku grabs the safety's eyes, and it should not, but it does. And what that means now is the corner, who's an outside leverage player because of Peoples-Jones' stem inside, he's not in good position to play this deep post route at all. So you see Peoples-Jones run by him. But the important thing here, this came out of 13 personnel, three tight ends. It's run personnel. They're in a run formation. Everything they do, Colin, is built off the run game. That's when Baker Mayfield is at his best. It's not an individual offense in terms of, oh, they need Odell Beckham. It's a schemed offense, and it doesn't really matter who he's throwing to.
Yeah. Great stuff, Greg, as always. Thank you. Even notice Justin Herbert's hair. That's the kind of work we get from Greg Cosell. Good seeing you again.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Saturday, Big 12 contenders square off in the Big Noon Saturday game of the week as 8th-ranked Oklahoma faces off with number 13 Baylor. It all starts with the Big Noon Kickoff Crew live from Waco at 10 a.m. Eastern, all part of the Big Noon Saturday on Fox and Fox Sports app.
You know, it's really interesting. It's not going to be a great quarterback draft class out of college. And I think most people are acknowledging there's a kid here, a kid there. It's not. The kid at Pittsburgh I like, kid at Liberty people like. It's not a great class. So we also know that Aaron Rodgers could move. Deshaun Watson is going to move. And I strongly believe Russell Wilson will look and go to the front office and look to move, especially if this season keeps going down the drain. He wants an offensive coach. And so I've said before with Aaron, I think Green Bay either smartly resigns him or he would go to Pittsburgh. Why? Because quarterbacks that leave good situations, like Brady in New England, tend to go to places that have the one thing they don't feel they consistently get. Aaron doesn't feel like, I never get a great defense. That's why Tom left for Tampa. I never have great weapons. Never had an offensive head coach. So Tom, it's not like he didn't take 80% of Tampa with him or 80% of New England with him, but the one thing he didn't have was sort of a laid-back offensive coach and great weapons. That's what he chose. What has Aaron not really had? A great defense, playmaking defense consistently. He'll take a lot of what he learned in Green Bay, very successful with him. But like Tom, what don't I have? Russell Wilson's interesting here. So Russell Wilson is watching Aaron with an offensive coach. And Drew Brees had an offensive coach. And Tom Brady now has an offensive coach. And I look at Russell Wilson. Seattle does not want him in the NFC. They want him in the AFC, just like Aaron, if he went, would go to Pittsburgh. You don't want to face Aaron in your conference and get in the way of you going to Super Bowls. If you meet him in the Super Bowl, that's another thing. You can live with that. I think the Denver Broncos, I'll say this, Drew Lock's done, Teddy's not the answer. I believe the Denver Broncos put this down. are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before Brady got there. Yeah, they got good players. And now Brady gets there, and you're like, hell, they're loaded. If you look at Denver right now, tight end, Fant, stud. Wide receivers, it's Jerry Jeudy. It's Cortland Sutton. It's the kid they drafted out of Penn State. They have two good backs. They have a star tight end. They have 3 to 4 wide receivers. But again, they play in a division with high-profile Kansas City, high-profile Raiders and their chaos, Justin Herbert. Denver is Tampa. They've won Super Bowls. They've had moments they're great. I think Denver's talent is way better than people think. Just like when Brady got to Tampa, we're all like, they're loaded. Well, they were loaded with Jameis. I think Denver has got two great corners. The reason they got rid of Von Miller, they like their young edge rushers. I think their offensive line is at least average. Their wide receiving group just needs the right quarterback. Two good backs, potential star at tight end. The Russell Wilson, I know this is a off-season topic, but I'm looking at a bad quarterback draft. Deshaun Watson's out there. Aaron could go. Nobody's talking about Russell Wilson. I strongly believe he moves. I'm just throwing it out there. I watched Denver last weekend against Dallas, and I'm like, do we all understand? They did what Tampa would do. Like, a couple times last year, not last year, the year before with Jameis, you would watch Tampa play, and when Jameis was zoned in a little bit, you'd be like, oh, they match up with everybody. And then Brady gets there. They cut down on the turnovers. Brady makes the O-line. It's got more symmetry. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I'm telling you, Russell Wilson, Denver, put it down. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, sticking with Russell Wilson, he returned to practice on Monday for the first time since having surgery on his finger last month. He has not been limited this week, and Pete Carroll said he looks pretty good. He was also not seen wearing a glove to protect his finger during the open portions of practice. And barring any setbacks, the plan is to have Russell Wilson start on Sunday against the Packers. The Packers are favored by 3, according to Fox Bet, in this game.
They lose, they go 3-6. Russell is not going to be part of a losing franchise. Look at him. He's LeBron and Brady. He is totally, utterly committed. He will not stand with a 70-year-old head coach who has too much power.
What are the options, though, for Russell Wilson? He's just going to force his way out like he was talking about earlier
Denver's
in the offseason?
Yeah, Denver's got the receivers. So Denver goes to him and says, we have 4 receivers we like. You can have one of our receivers. We'll give you,
But what's the incentive for Seattle to do that?
4 draft picks.
Don't have a quarterback.
Well, then Pete will get all the first-round picks, and maybe Pete feels he can win without a great quarterback. Of course, that's wrong. Listen, we had the rumors last year, and there is a story that Chicago and Seattle actually talked. So Seattle took a call from Chicago.
I think it's ludicrous, the idea that Seattle would move Russell Wilson. For who? For what? How many draft picks is Russell Wilson worth?
5 first-rounders, Cortland Sutton, and a starting corner.
You don't have a quarterback.
Well, you got all these first rounders. If you're a bad
team,
it's
not a good quarterback class.
Well, if you like, let's say Kelly Pickett, the kid from Pittsburgh, Kenny Pickett, who I like, ends up being 9 or 10 pick. You move up and get Kenny Pickett.
I don't know. I'm doing whatever Russell wants. I'm not moving off of Russell Wilson.
This is just crazy speculation.
No, I mean, we talked about this in the offseason. He was unhappy. He wanted to be involved in some decisions and, kicked up some noise, which I have no problem with him doing. I didn't have any problem with Aaron Rodgers doing that. I don't have a problem with players. I don't have a problem with Odell doing that. Like, you should have some control at some point in your career.
My only statement is Denver is Tampa.
No, I do think that Denver is very interesting. Just because of that win last week.
No,
they do have some talent. Oh. They have some pieces, and they have been without a quarterback for a long time.
Like Tampa.
Which is why I would not move on from Russell Wilson. But this is going to be an interesting game this weekend. Obviously, we're going to wait and see if Aaron Rodgers is going to be back and how Russ looks in this game coming off of injury. So the 49ers.
Another thing to throw out. Justin Herbert, Mahomes in my division, and Derek Carr.
Yeah.
I have to go big. I cannot in Denver. I got Mahomes twice a year, Herbert twice a year, Carr twice a year.
They knew that going into this season,
but
they rolled out with what they have
now. You say, what would you give up? anything.
Oh, from Denver's perspective, of course.
6 first-round picks.
Rename the city after him if he needs it. But I'm talking about Seattle.
Well, they took a call from Chicago.
I think it's nuts.
Hey, this is not journalism, but it's on the fringes of it.
it's journalism adjacent. So the Niners gave up a lot to get Trey Lance in the draft this year, and he is sitting behind Jimmy G despite the Niners' 3-5 record. And Michael Irvin thinks it's time to get the rookie more involved.
I don't care how the rest of it goes or how you want to play the rest of it out. The rest of it, whatever we say and however it will fall off, must involve Trey Lance getting reps. You can say that no matter what. Right now, I don't care what the game, how it's going, where it is, what stage we're in. We're going to get him some reps. Now, that's a statement I think they should be making, and that's the direction I think they should be going in, bar none.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
I say this all the time. Nobody ever listens to me. It always ends up in the same situation every single time, like clockwork. Because you can only have one quarterback. And I even gave the grace to the Niners this year that they had Jimmy G. Trey Lance is a little raw. So let's go into the season with Jimmy G. I thought this was an outlier situation. Every other situation where you take a rookie quarterback, you should start right away. I don't care about Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes could have started his first year. He didn't. It worked out great. Fine. That's not the blueprint for rookie quarterbacks. You're wasting time. You're wasting development time. You're wasting reps. And you're wasting the ability to evaluate them in the whole. And this is exactly where they are right now in San Francisco.
By the way, I just thought of something else. Seattle gets, what's their biggest weakness? Corner. Give us Patrick Surtain.
No way.
And 5 first-round picks. Pete would love a corner. 5 first-round picks, Patrick Surtain for Russell Wilson. Am I nuts?
I'm not moving off of Russell Wilson. The answer is no.
No, you're not. But I'm just saying, if Russell's not happy and wants out, and I think Denver is going to be a... I think Denver wakes up and goes, Herbert, Carr, Mahomes.
Herbert, Carr, Mahomes were in their division at the beginning of this year, and they did nothing. They
learned
out
from
with
it.
Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater.
Nothing.
Well, I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm not taking a call about Russell Wilson unless Russell Wilson is sitting in my office saying, "I will not play here again. I will retire.
All right.
You have to trade me. I'm not moving him." But I agree with Michael Irvin that once the season is lost, now if they lose this weekend against the Rams, the Rams are favored by 4 according to Fox Bet. Trey Lance is back from his knee injury. Put him out there. You have to see what you have in him. You have to see what he's going to develop into. We all know what Jimmy G is at this point. There's nothing more to evaluate there. And again, this is why I firmly believe if you take a rookie quarterback, you should start week one. I don't want to hear about offensive lines, and I want to hear about how raw they are. You have a certain amount of a grace period when you take a rookie quarterback where the expectations are low. Everyone understands what it is. The front office understands, the owner understands, and the rest of the world gets that this is a rookie. It's going to take some time. Why are you wasting that time? Jimmy G is clearly not doing what he needs to do. If they lose this weekend, he should be out there. So Odell's a free agent and will reportedly take a few more days to make a decision about what team he wants to go to. The Packers are said to be on his short list, and Devontae Adams would welcome the addition, said his hopes are high that Odell will join Green Bay. And one team that is not looking into Odell is the Bucks. Bruce Arians says, "We've already got AB. We don't need OBJ. Too many letters."
That's funny.
I mean, it's true. Like, they don't need Odell Beckham Jr. at all. Like, that's not, I don't even think that's a place Odell should consider. Like, obviously you'd want to play with Tom Brady, but they have so many weapons. That's not going to solve your problem. You're not going to get the reps that you need there. Devontae Adams said he has spoken to Odell a little bit. Diana Rossini said this morning that there are teams talking to Odell that believe he will wait until after the games are complete on Sunday to make his final decision about where he's going to go. So it is Odell watch over the weekends. I believe the Packers is the best place for him. I think it solves the issue of being with a contender. I think Aaron Rodgers can get him the ball. They could use a strong number two. It's not forever. It's November to hopefully February. And then you're a free agent. And if it goes well, you can pretty much go wherever you want.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Something made me laugh that happened last night with the Golden State Warriors. And I got to talk about this because it's the opposite of Russell Westbrook. And I'll just leave it at that. It just cracks me up. And it's what drives coaches crazy. Nuts. Order Jersey Mike's in your mobile app. Get delivery to your home or for pickup. It took me 15 seconds. Limited time, free delivery on game day Saturday when you order through the Jersey Mike app. Jersey Mike's, be us up above.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm George Reister, host of the Reister or Wrong podcast. This is the intersection where sports, business, society, and pop culture meet the truth. Absolute fire on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Facts only. Make sure you check your feelings at the door because no BS is allowed. We keep it 100. This is where real conversations happen. Listen to the Right or Wrong podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Holiday season, also Tommy John softness season. Treat yourself. New pair of Tommy John men's underwear. 20% off your first order. Go to TommyJohn.com/herd. TommyJohn.com/herd. So what drives coaches crazy? If a coach has a limited player, but he knows what he gets, you can coach around that. If a coach has a great player, they all want those, you know what you get every night. What drives coaches nuts and gets them fired is when a guy can be often spectacular and you have no idea when he's going to deliver it. So when Andrew Wiggins came out of college from Kansas, I loved him. I couldn't remember the last time I said this. He has zero bust potential. He was vertical. He's a bright kid. He could shoot a jumper. In college, at least, he was a pretty good defender. He was cat quick. He had the ability fast jump, like up 44-inch vertical. I loved him. And you could just see, just need to gain 10 pounds, which I'm not sure he ever gained. And then his whole career, he's like 19 a night. And you're like, about six times a year, he goes crazy. And last night was one of those nights. And it's not a coincidence. He ate the Timberwolves alive, the team that traded him. He dropped 35. He was the best player on the floor. He was dunking over Karl Anthony Towns. He was electric. Oh, by the way, he shot 74% from the field. Do you know the number one team, his best games in his career? Do you know who they're against? The team that traded him. He shoots over 50% against one team in the league. It's the T-Wolves. And he shoots 61%. He's literally Jordan against the T-Wolves. Do you know the other team? So he has his highest scoring average and highest field goal percentage against the team that traded him, Minnesota. Do you know who he has the second highest scoring average and second best field goal percentage? Against Cleveland. The other team that said, no, we're going to get Kevin Love. We don't want you. And this is why Andrew Wiggins is the NBA's biggest tease. You could get this twice a week from him. He is an unbelievable talent. And it's funny. With Russell Westbrook, you just wish he'd pump the brakes occasionally. With Andrew Wiggins, you always feel like you got to put the thing on the batteries. Like, one guy is always running. One guy always needs a jump start. It's like if you combined Westbrook and Andrew Wiggins, if you could give Westbrook the laid-back sort of chill, I'll get to it when I get to it, occasionally, and if you gave Wiggins Westbrook's passion for basketball, intensity, Westbrook cares so much, it literally unravels him sometimes. He literally cares so much about the sport, so much. His best friend is the basketball. Russell wants to hit every shot. He wants to dog you every possession, and Wiggins has virtually none of it, except when he plays the T-Wolves and the Cavs, and then he's literally Michael Jordan. And I'm watching that thinking, God, this is why coaches. And by the way, when he came to Golden State, I mean, immediately it was like, oh, he's a trade piece. But Golden State watched him and Steph and Clay get hurt, and you watch him and you're like, no, he does. He gives you these nights. I mean, you watch that thing last night, you're like, if you'd never seen a basketball game, and you watch that game last night, you would think Andrew Wiggins is an MVP-level player. T-Wolves, Cavs, got rid of him. He's the best. And I will say this. Golden State is the best watch in the league currently. and they are really good. By the way, Carl Anthony Towns after the game said Wiggins, his former teammate, loves revenge games.
He always does that. Any team, Cavaliers traded him. Wolves, you expect him to come out and play well. He was 9 for 9 at first. Kept them in the game. He won them the game. So,
yeah, Andrew Wiggins. I loved him out of college. But he's an 18-point-a-game guy in the NBA. 18-19 Cavs, 18-19 Warriors. But this is why, though, when you get him, you know, everybody's been talking about he's a trade piece, but if Klay comes back and is 90% what he was, Jordan Poole, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, I don't know. In today's NBA, Andrew Wiggins has these nights. Again, y'all love Westbrook. He doesn't have a lot of great playoff games. Y'all love Harden. He deteriorates in the postseason. Do you get rid of him? I'm not sure if you do. I mean, he's a veteran. You'll have to teach him how to play basketball. He knows the system now, but he is maddening. And last night, he was absolutely spectacular. By the way, Cam Newton is now officially a member of the Carolina Panthers. Aqib Talib had predicted it to me before the season. He goes, just watch. Gets vaccinated. He's going to be in shape. He's going to release some videos. Somebody's going to get hurt, and they need a veteran quarterback, and it's going to be a team that's thinking, we can still make the playoffs. So Carolina's got the defense. They've got the coach. They've got some weapons. McCaffrey's back. Cam, by the way, I don't know if it'll work, but it'll be better than Darnold, and it'll be better than a backup. And I don't think it'll take forever to figure it out. I don't think this is a quarterback-driven franchise right now. I don't think they are. So it's a defense, it's a coaching, it's a McCaffrey-led franchise. This is not a quarterback-led franchise. Keep your eye on Carolina with Cam. Could be fun. We head to the third hour on a Thursday next.